Welcome to the 331st episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I'm your host, Randy Winograd. In this edition of the podcast, our topics are a review of Patrick's weekend predictions, a preview of the college football playoff first round games, a look back at week 15 of the NFL season, and our weekly look at basketball, starting with the NBA and the most significant action in college basketball action. Let's jump right in then with a look at Patrick's weekend predictions. In the NFL, Patrick went 1-3. In the NBA, Patrick went 3-1. In NCAA basketball, Patrick went 2-2. That means this week he was a perfect 500. Well, not perfect, but an even 500. 6-6 record. That brings his overall record to 1,416-898. That is a 61.2% winning percentage. Patrick, your thoughts on your weekend predictions?
Well, I didn't think I did too badly, mainly because that 1-3 NFL record could have been 3-1 if it weren't for a few teams choking big leads, frankly. The Chiefs were up 13-3. They choked that lead and lost 16-13. The Bills beat the Patriots 35-31, while the Patriots were up 21-0 at some point in that game. Those two I picked. Interestingly, because of the way that the odds worked out, I picked two true underdogs and two true favorites, and both of them didn't really work out necessarily. The only favorite I picked that won was the Rams beating the Lions 41-34. The Chiefs were the other favorite that I picked, and that was wrong. And then I felt like the Patriots easily should have won that game against the Bills, but they didn't. And then the Broncos beat the Packers 34-26. That was the other favorite I picked there. I picked the Packers, who were the favorites. They didn't win. So picked one underdog wrong and picked two favorites wrong and one favorite right. So doesn't really say much about how Vegas did that day, although I know there were a lot of reports that they did well because of the amount of underdogs that won and the amount of close games. For various reasons, they did okay. They always do. And then in the NBA, I picked two NBA Cup semifinal games and also two random games that also happened over the weekend on Friday. The Pistons beat the Hawks 142-115. I got that right. The Timberwolves beat the Warriors 127-120, despite not having Anthony Edwards in that game. I got that right. The Knicks beat the Magic 132-120. That was an NBA Cup semifinal. That was the Eastern Conference final, so to speak, of the NBA Cup. I got that right. And the Spurs beat the Thunder 111-109, which I got wrong. Of course, the Thunder, that's their second loss of the season. Obviously, they were going to lose at some point, but wasn't expecting it to be that game, to be quite honest. But good for the Spurs. I mean, someone's going to have to beat the Thunder if they're going to not win the title. So it's good to have a few teams that have proven they can beat them early on in the year, although considering one of those teams is the Blazers, they will not be playing them in the postseason. But the Spurs, obviously, getting Victor Wembanyama back, they do have a chance to be, A, playing the Thunder, and B, maybe to beat them based on the way they've been playing, even without Wembanyama. So I like what the Spurs are doing. Obviously, Cup final game is tonight between the Spurs and the Knicks, so that'll be an interesting game to watch. Maybe the Spurs care more about that game because they are younger players who probably need the money a lot more than need that $500,000 a lot more than guys like Jalen Brunson and Karl Anthony Towns and Mikal Bridges, who are making millions upon millions upon millions, not necessarily on rookie deals. So maybe the Spurs play a little harder than the Knicks do. I think I would pick the Spurs to win that game, to be honest, even though obviously the Knicks are going to be favored in that one. But I don't see how they guard Wembanyama the way he played yesterday, or I guess 2 days ago at this point, was just amazing. So taking the Spurs in that one, obviously not a real prediction, but, you know, a good game nonetheless. And then in college basketball, a really, really interesting week. If you want to talk about betting lines being funny, the only game that I got wrong in this one was picking a 10.5-point favorite. But I picked Nebraska and Illinois because I thought that that line was crazy and that Nebraska would keep this game close, and they did more than keep it close. They actually went on the road and won at Illinois 83-80. They're now up to inside of the top four seeds on my bracketology. Just a crazy, crazy rise that this team has had. They're undefeated. Best start in program history. They tied that in the middle of the week by beating Wisconsin by 30, and then they broke it in the middle at the end of the week with this win over Illinois. So I got that one wrong. I went out on a limb and said that Arizona would have their first loss this weekend. I was wrong. Alabama kept it close at the half. They were actually leading at the half, I think, by 2 points. So It felt like I was right, or at least on track, and then all of a sudden Arizona just went on a giant, giant run, like a 21-0 run, something like that, just completely ending that game, and ended up winning 96-75, so I got that one wrong. Then the other two games, number 17 Arkansas was an underdog. They beat number 16 Texas Tech 93-86, which I got right, and then number 19 Kansas went on the road and beat NC State 77-76 in overtime. Which I got right. That was the Melvin Council game. He had 36 points on 9 3-pointers, despite only hitting 5 all year long going into that game. So, pretty ridiculous game in Raleigh, but Kansas escapes with the victory. And really, a great weekend for the Big 12. The only big loss was Texas Tech, but I think that team doesn't need to carry as much of the mantle as people expected them to have to. Coming into the year, Kansas has been much better than people thought. Arizona, obviously, much better than people thought, because outside of the top 10 in the preseason AP poll, and they're obviously number one right now. So Texas Tech doesn't need to carry that all on their shoulders. And then obviously you still have teams like Houston easily in the championship mix in that conference. There's a lot of good teams in the Big 12 in basketball this year.
All right, that wraps up our look at Patrick's weekend predictions for this week. Patrick's predictions for next weekend will be posted on our social media handles on Thursday. Those social media handles are 4th and 24. Let's now turn our attention to college football. The college football playoff starts this weekend with 4 round one games at campus sites, which is always exciting. Patrick, let's have a preview of those 4 games, starting with number 9, Alabama, at number 8, Oklahoma.
Yeah, I think this one's an interesting game because Alabama has the revenge factor, but, you know, based on coaching search stuff, you could also argue they have the distraction factor that's going against them, so competing motives there. They're also on the road. They already lost to this team at home. I think the interesting thing is that they turned the ball over a ton in that game. They outgained Oklahoma. I pretty much doubled them in yardage, I think, in that first matchup. But that doesn't mean that they won't just do that again. I think people are underestimating the fact that just because they had one game where they completely, you know, fumbled the game away, doesn't mean that they won't just do it again. I mean, last game they outgained Oklahoma 406-212, but 3 turnovers in the game were the reason why they lost. I don't necessarily think that Oklahoma has gotten, frankly, much better since that game, but also neither has Alabama. I mean, Alabama has taken, since that game, okay, they played Eastern Illinois, so that's not even a game, and they struggled against Auburn, and then they got ran out of the building by Georgia. So I don't exactly think that's any sign of improvement from that game. I think, if anything, that's a sign that maybe what they did against Oklahoma was more of a sign of things to come. Meanwhile, Oklahoma's defense has progressively gotten stingier and stingier as the season has gone on, giving up 34 to Ole Miss and 27 to Tennessee before playing Alabama, and then giving up just 6 to Missouri and 13 to LSU in their season finale. And of course, Missouri had a Heisman top 10 finisher in Ahmad Hardy, and an All-American in Ahmad Hardy, who only ended up with 57 rushing yards on 17 carries. He was outrushed in that game by John Mateer, Oklahoma's quarterback. So I really like Oklahoma's defense, and I think that Alabama didn't get 3 turnovers by chance. I think they turned the ball over 3 times because they played the best defense they've played all year, outside of Georgia, and maybe even a better defense than Georgia, frankly. So I'm going to go ahead and say I have Oklahoma winning this game. I like the home field advantage. I know it's tough to beat a team twice, but I don't think this is the same thing as Oregon and Ohio State, where you have a neutral site after a close game that was really just even on both sides, with both sides playing their best. This is a team that beat another team on the road, going to then play them at home. I like Oklahoma in that game, although I know that may not be the most popular opinion, but you know, they're favored. They're 1.5-point underdogs, so it's basically a pick'em line from Vegas.
All right. Well, I'm going to take Alabama in this game just for the reason. A few reasons. One, tough. I always think it's tough to beat a team two times in a row. I also, it's a little bit of an emotional hedge for me because I'm actually rooting for Oklahoma to win for selfish Michigan coaching search reasons. The one thing about this game, if Oklahoma can shut down Alabama's passing game, then they win the game because I think that's Alabama's entire offense. Alabama does not have the dominant rushing attack it's had before. And then the other comment is, why is this the first game of the playoff? Why is this a Friday night? at 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific. We're going to talk about it, but you got a couple other clunker games. There's really two good games, I think, and this is the best of the two games, the closest at least on paper. Why not have it be on a Saturday from a ratings perspective and also on a Friday night? People will watch whatever you put up if it's the only college football playoff game. I don't get it, but those are my thoughts on that game. So then let's move to the next game that is scheduled, which is scheduled for noon Eastern time. So again, the second best game is the one that starts at noon on Saturday, leaving us with the last the worst two games last, which again makes no sense to me. Miami at Texas A&M.
I think this is definitely the most interesting game in my opinion, because Miami has something to prove. A&M has something to prove. After that loss to Texas, everybody said, well, they didn't play anybody in the top half of the SEC, and when they finally did, they lost. And for Miami, it's proving that you belong. The inclusion in this playoffs obviously was heavily debated, to say the very least. But I think A&M is going to win. I do think that Miami's defense will do enough to really keep this game, honestly, lower scoring than they expect. The total on this game is 11 points higher than the total in the Alabama-Oklahoma game, which I know is because Oklahoma's defense is great and both of those teams love to slow the game down, and Oklahoma's offense isn't great. But I think the defenses in this game are really, really good as well. I see this as kind of like a 24-21, 23-20 type game where it comes down to not a field goal at the end of the game, but, you know, a team can get a field goal to tie the game, win the game, whatever. At the end of the game, you just can't get it done. I think A&M does win this game, though. I think the home field advantage, again, plays a big part in this. I think last year all four home teams won, so I don't think this is necessarily going out on much of a limb. But I definitely have A&M winning this game. I just think, frankly, better quarterback play, better defense. They're basically a better version of Miami. And they're very, very similar teams, I think, in terms of style. I think that's not a crazy thing to say at all, other than, you know, Marcel Reed liking to use his legs a lot more than Carson Beck does. But overall, similar teams built around their new-look receiving cores and their quarterbacks who've shown flashes of being special in the past but haven't quite sustained that. And then good running games and great defenses on both sides. So I like A&M, though, still to win this game. Although I will say, under comment on the scheduling, I get why Oregon is the latest game because they're the West Coast team, but they could have put Ole Miss as the 9 o'clock or noon game. That would have made a little bit more sense. Also because Texas, I don't even think, is on the Eastern time zone. So this is an 11 a.m. local kickoff for them. So even if you went just by time zone, it should have at least been Ole Miss, then Miami, then Oregon. And that would make a lot more sense than what they currently have.
Yeah, timing is right. It is an 11 a.m. Texas time kick. Would have had the same issue, I think, at Ole Miss. I actually don't know. I think Mississippi's in the Central time, too. But makes no sense. Have the first, you know, bookend the two, let's call them, we're thinking lesser games, around the better game Saturday. Frankly, one of these games, like I said, should have been should have been on Friday. And obviously, Oregon being the late game makes sense. But without getting any more into our scheduling gripes, I agree with you on the analysis of the Texas A&M Miami game. I think this game, if it played on a neutral field, Texas wins. I think that if this game's at Miami, Texas be a very close game, but I would pick Texas A&M to win. And with it being at Kyle Field, I think this is a Texas A&M romp, frankly. So let's move on chronologically, as we've complained about, to the next game, number 11, Tulane, at number 6, Ole Miss. Another rematch of a regular season game.
Why wouldn't call your analysis agreeing with me on A&M and Miami? Because I said it's a close game, not a romp. So that's definitely not what I said.
The reasons why I'm picking them.
That's fair enough. But yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about romps, frankly, it's these next two games. I mean, look, these teams, you know, we've talked a lot about how the selection committee could use, could take a page out of the book of the college basketball tournament committee. And, you know, one of the things that they do on that committee is they avoid rematches, which this is a rematch. This already happened this season. Ole Miss beat Tulane 45-10 at home. And no offense to Tulane, but I don't think not having Lane Kiffin in this game makes a 35-point difference. I don't think that Tulane has gotten worse since they played each other. I don't think they've gotten better to the point that they're all of a sudden going to flip this game around, though. So, I mean, there's just not, I don't like the fact that there's a rematch here, I think is the best way to state this. I think, you know, if you need to mess with the matchups, I'd rather you just mess with the matchups. But look, Jake Retzlaff went 5 of 17 for 56 yards in that first game. Ole Miss is known for not really having a good defense. So if that's how their defense played in game one of this, I don't really expect this game to go any different, especially considering that Ole Miss, that was their second game with Trinidad Chambliss playing quarterback after he started his first career game at Arkansas for Ole Miss. So it's an interesting thing to look at here, but Chambliss is even more settled in. Tulane probably has gotten better over the season, and the coaching advantage is going to be an interesting storyline, but I don't think that makes it a game that's winnable for Tulane. It will be a lot closer, though, in my opinion. I don't think it's going to be 45-10. I think, you know, Ole Miss is going to win this game by at least two possessions pretty easily, pretty comfortably, but I don't necessarily think we're talking about a 35-point game again.
Yeah, I agree with you. Interesting, in these first four games, we've got four schools dealing with coaching changes. It's pretty crazy. Sorry, three schools dealing with coaching changes, one with a speculative coaching change.
Four dealing with it in these last two games alone, if you talk about coordinators,
yes,
outside of Dan Lanning. So
that's true. The difference is Tulane has their head coach coaching in this game, even though he's leaving. Same with the game we'll talk about later with James Madison. But Ole Miss actually is getting their their play caller. Charlie Weiss Jr. is coaching in this game. So it's really an absence of Lane Kiffin. I think Ole Miss has a chip on their shoulder to prove that they're more than Lane Kiffin. Even if they didn't have the chip on their shoulder, there's just too much of a talent gap between these two teams. I agree with you. Ole Miss has actually gotten better. I'm sure Tulane has too, but this game is not going to be close. You say two possessions. I think it's a 20-point game.
I said at least two.
Yeah, well, I agree with you then. It'll be a 20-point game. So let's move on to what I think, without stealing your preview, which I think is going to be even less of a competitive game, and that's number 12-seeded James Madison. Thank you, Duke. At number 5, Oregon.
I disagree with that wholeheartedly. James Madison 100% is keeping this game closer than Tulane is. They just don't. They don't have the capability. Tulane doesn't have the capability that James Madison does to compete, mainly because JMU actually has a line, which I think is the big difference in a Tulane Ole Miss game. I think they can get Ole Miss doesn't even have, you know, and they have a. I mean, obviously they're top five, they're top six team in the country, so they're good at everything. But you don't look at that team and say, wow, their pass rush is so dominant. It's not like in Oklahoma. JMU has a line. They can get Dante Moore off his spot a few times in this game, enough that I think they come out with a few third down stops that Oregon thinks, all right, we're not going for it, even though it's a playoff game. We're going to win this game. We don't need to play so aggressive. I think there are a few situations where, you know, Oregon goes run, run, pass, and the pass doesn't work, and it's 4th and 4, and they say, you know what, we're not going to chance this. That's the way to lose this game, is to start chasing points in a game that we have firmly under control. I think this ends up just a lower scoring game, which leans itself to being a closer game. I think this is like a 28-10 type of a win. I don't think it's going to be a massive blowout, but I think Ole Miss has more of a likelihood to just put up 40 points and seal that game early than Oregon does. I think Oregon plays a much slower, deliberate game. And I think that JMU, on the other hand, they'll slow the game down whether they're winning or losing. And I think that just in the trenches, they actually have a much better chance to compete than Tulane does against Ole Miss, whereas, you know, that's kind of going to decide the game, that Ole Miss game, because Ole Miss, frankly, wouldn't even need to pass to win that game. And when they do start passing, they're going to have even more of a disadvantage or an advantage on the edges. So I think that overall, JMU is going to make this a much closer game, just because I think Ole Miss, talent-wise, their gap with Tulane is bigger. And I also think that, frankly, coaching-wise, Oregon doesn't have any coordinators in this game, which I think is actually a pretty big deal to think about heading into this game. I think that's a much bigger deal than both of the teams that have, you know, coaching situations in flux. It's kind of even on both sides. I think JMU for Bob Chesney, this is like, look, this is their last dance, right? This is all they have. This is going to be it for the Bob Chesney era. And I think that they know that with that change coming, they have one last chance to prove that they kind of belong and like they have all season. And I think, frankly, you also look at when they played Louisville earlier in the season. I don't think Louisville's obviously a playoff caliber team, but Louisville did beat Miami, who is, or I don't know if they beat Miami, but they might have a transitive property win over Miami, something like that. But Louisville at some point was in the top 15 in the country, or at least in the top 20. So JMU has shown the ability to compete with them. That game was like 7-7 in the middle of the third quarter. They've shown the ability to at least compete with those types of teams. The best thing Tulane has in that way is a win over their former quarterback at Duke by 7. And then, you know, a win over Northwestern at home, who was kind of a mess at the beginning of the season. So I don't really think that if you're looking at how these teams fared against real competition or real, like, big power conference competition, I think JMU's eye test is a lot better than Tulane. So I think, you know, closer game, but Oregon wins pretty easily.
All right. Well, I can tell you one thing. We said we've got really two good games here and maybe two clunkers. Assuming the outcomes happen the way we think they will, and Alabama-Oklahoma is really a splitting hairs, the next weekend's games, you're going to have four fantastic games. So we will look forward to talking about what happened in these games next week and previewing what will be the final eight in college football playoff next week. Let's move on with our look back at week 14 in NFL action.
Well, in the NFL, you had a pretty interesting week. I'm going to start with the NFC South, which refuses to crown a winner. It's not the first time that we've said this. It's not the only time that we'll say this. This division, for some reason, every single year, produces two pretty bad teams at the top of the division. It's pretty crazy. But last year, the Falcons were in the race all the way until the end. This year, it's the Buccaneers and the Panthers, who are both at 7-7. The Falcons, of course, speaking of them, beat the Buccaneers 29-28 on Thursday Night Football. A crazy comeback in that game. A 3rd-and-28, I believe, conversion that made that one possible. Then that meant that the Buccaneers were 7-7, and it meant that the Panthers were in first place. And all they had to do to pull a game ahead of the Buccaneers was beat the Saints, which, of course, is all the Buccaneers had to do last week to keep a game lead on the Panthers. And what did both teams do? They both lost to the Saints. So the Saints at 4-10 knock off the Panthers and the Buccaneers in back-to-back weeks. They are, of course, 2-10 on the season heading into those two games. And then all of a sudden they make both teams fall to, 7-7, which is just, I don't know what to say about this division, but I will say the only thing, that makes me a little bit angry about it is the fact that one of those two teams between the Buccaneers and the Panthers, and frankly, the Falcons, I think, are still in divisional contention now that they've beaten the Buccaneers, and there are still 3 weeks left, and they're only two games back. They have no chance, but they're technically in contention. The thing that just bothers me is that when you look at the playoff picture, one of the teams in the NFC West is going to literally lose the NFC West by a game, or maybe two games if you're the 49ers, but speaking about the Rams and the Seahawks specifically, they're going to lose by the margin of losing to each other. And then all of a sudden, they're going to have to go on the road and play a team that's probably going to end up at 9-8 on the season. I mean, that just feels so bad considering that both of those teams currently are tied for the one seed. I mean, you have the 11-3 Rams and the 11-3 Seahawks, who, of course, only trailed the Broncos for the best record in the NFL. And all of a sudden, they lose one game, and now they're playing a road game in the NFC South and tough travel week for either of those teams as they're traveling across the entire country to go play one of those teams, and then also getting a harder matchup in the next round. So it's a really annoying situation to be in if you're in the NFC West. And speaking of those NFC West teams, the Seahawks moved to 11-3 this week by winning the Phillip Rivers Bowl. Honestly, the Colts could still get into the playoffs. I think that was my main takeaway from this week. I don't think that they will, but it's really not impossible. I mean, there's still only one game behind the Texans. Do I think that this offense is, you know, quality? Absolutely not. But do I think that maybe, just maybe, the pressure could get to Houston in that game when the Colts play them? And if it's still within a game at the end of the season, you could see those two teams actually getting, actually battling for that final playoff spot and Indianapolis could win? Yeah, I think they could win that game. The real thing that's going to flip this, though, is can the Chargers actually beat the Texans? Because if the Chargers don't beat the Texans, well, spoiler alert, they're not going to lose to the Raiders. That's just not going to happen. So I think that in the end, we're looking at a game between we're looking at the Colts not making the playoffs, which is sad because Phillip Rivers, frankly, in this game didn't play terribly. Honestly, he played fine. They didn't have much of a downfield passing game, but he had a few back shoulder throws that were pretty nice that, you know, not exactly like the 50-yard shots that Daniel Jones was throwing down the field, but still some chunk plays. They still run the ball well. Their defense played out of its mind. They held Seattle to 6 field goals instead of giving up any touchdowns in that game, which was massively, massively important. So I like the way the Colts played, but again, I think it's probably too big of a hole, but it would be a very nice story if Phillip Rivers were to somehow lead that team to the playoffs. Then moving on in AFC action, the Broncos beat the Packers 34-26. I guess that's AFC and NFC action. That means, of course, that the Packers fall behind in the division. They are no longer leading the NFC North. That's now the Bears who lead that division after they just destroyed the Browns. But the Broncos, sitting at 12-2, they are now in first place because, as we talked about, the Bills beat the Patriots over the weekend. The Broncos are also the one of the two teams that clinched a playoff berth this weekend, along with the Rams, who we'll talk about later. But the Broncos clinching that at 12-2. Of course, the Chiefs also got eliminated this week in that game with the Chargers, which we'll talk about in a second. So very clearly a changing of the guards here in the AFC West, as the Chargers eliminate the Chiefs and still are in the wild card trailing the Broncos. So the Broncos at 12-2, though, in very, very nice position to get home field and that bye. That's very, very important. And obviously Mile High is a tough place to go play on the road and play a playoff game. So I know there's a lot of discussion about how the Bills, now that they've gotten this win, might just storm through the playoffs because they don't have Mahomes in their way. They don't have Lamar in their way, theoretically, which we don't even know that for sure. But there's a lot of talk about that. I think people are underestimating the fact that going to Arrowhead to play a game, I know this team is 12-2 off a bunch of close wins, but they have still beaten all the teams you'd want them to beat. They beat the Texans already. They beat the Chiefs. They beat the Packers, who were, frankly, another contender. They lost to the Colts by one on a weird field goal play. They beat the Eagles on the road. They've beaten whoever you'd want them to beat to prove that they're a contender. And they've also won 10 games in a row. So I think that's just hard to deny, especially with the fact that beating them at Arrowhead is going to be a big, big, big challenge. But speaking of the Texans, they continue their run of dominance. They have now won 6 in a row. Their dominant defense just really coming through. They beat the Cardinals this weekend 40-20. Not very close. Speaking of not close games in that division, the Jaguars, now at 10-4, beat the Jets 48-20. The Jets fired their defensive coordinator after this game, which is not surprising. But look, Jacksonville still leading that division, the AFC South. Very, very important. Obviously, to get that divisional lead, although it's interesting because they might play a team in their division anyway. They have split the two games with the Texans on the season. They have the Broncos, the Colts, and the Titans left. I think pretty easy 2-1 there. So then it comes down to, can Houston hold down the fort, go 2-1 themselves, which again, Raiders, Chargers, Colts, they probably will go 2-1 as well. But they need 3-0 to win this division. I just don't think that they're going to get, I don't think they're rattling off 9 wins in a row. That's just really, really hard to do. In the NFL, I think, you know, are the Chargers a better team than them? Probably not. But can they get a win off of them when they're fighting for a division and the Texans just haven't lost in forever? Yes. So it'll be an interesting battle. But obviously, the AFC South, typically a weaker division, kind of like the NFC South. But all of a sudden this year, looking like a very, very interesting race all the way to the very end of the year. And we'll definitely all be keeping up with that as the race unfolds over the next 2 weeks, as the NFL moves to having Saturday action and Christmas Day action and all of the above. But moving on, of course, to the most important game of the week, the Bills beat the Patriots 35-31. We talked about it earlier, 21-0 the Patriots led in this game. They led 24-7 at the half, and yet the Bills 28 unanswered to take the lead. Patriots eventually scored and made this game a lot closer, but then and did take the lead back. But then the Bills scored one more time, put this game away at 35-31. The Bills still not really, frankly, they're still not in the divisional picture. This was the only game that could pull them close to that. But I think, you know, for the Patriots, it probably refocused them enough that now they're looking at that Ravens game as a must-win game. And the last two games of the year against the Jets and the Dolphins, they're not going to lose either of those two games. But they just need to beat the Ravens, and if they can beat the Ravens, they're going to win this division because they're going to win those other two games, and they already have a game advantage on Buffalo. Meanwhile, Buffalo plays the Browns, the Eagles, and the Jets. I don't think they're going to lose a game either. But both of those two teams, with the Bills playing the Eagles the Patriots playing the Ravens, they both have games against playoff-hungry teams that could challenge them and have a lot of motivation and need to win those games. I don't think it'll happen for either of them, but definitely important that the Patriots go on the road and get that win over the Ravens this weekend. Obviously, the Ravens need it a lot more than the Patriots do, but the Patriots still want to force this AFC to go through Gillette if possible, and if not, at least until the championship game. And then, you know, maybe they'll go back to Denver, and we'll pretend that we're back in the Manning-Brady days now that we have Drake May and Bo Nix instead. But then there's the last two games of the week, the Chargers beating the Chiefs 16-13. Obviously, biggest, most important thing that happened in this game is that Patrick Mahomes tore his ACL, which means his availability for next year's opener is also in doubt, obviously out for the rest of the season. The Chiefs eliminated from playoff contention for the first time since 2014, which is pretty crazy. They've obviously had a long dynasty run. A lot of people saying they're pretty much like the Astros of football because of the same amount of titles, you know, the likability of the team, frankly, to be honest. And also, when their playoff runs came to an end and the similar amount of divisional titles and conference titles in that span, and how long it took them to go into a play, end their own playoff streak. But finally, one of the bigger games of the weekend, the Rams beat the Lions, the 41-34, Rams moving to 11-3 and clinching a playoff spot in that game. Meanwhile, the Lions are sitting in the 8th seed, and of course, a team that can go on the road and compete with the Rams is going to probably miss the playoffs just because somebody needs to win the NFC South. Obviously, the Buccaneers or the Panthers are going to give whoever they play not a tough game, and not as tough of a game as it would be if they had to play the Lions instead, but unfortunately, that is the way that it works. Sometimes the division winners don't always come out so well. This season, of course, the three best records in the NFC, and then I guess the 49ers are tied with the Bears for the third best and fourth best records, they're all in the NFC West, so unfortunately, that division's going to have the one seed, but also the five seed and the six seed, most likely, while other divisions have some weaker teams get it in the playoffs. So, interesting race. The Rams currently the leader in the clubhouse with the one seed and with the NFC West divisional lead.
All right, that wraps up our look at the NFL action for this week's podcast. Let's turn our attention to basketball, starting with action in the NBA. As always, looking at the Eastern Conference first.
In the Eastern Conference, it's the Pistons who continue to prove that they are not a joke in first place in this conference. They are now 21-5 on the season. Again, the only team that has a better record, the Oklahoma City Thunder, of course. But the Pistons have won four in a row, including a big game yesterday against the Celtics, where they were actually the underdogs on the road, but they came out with the victory. The Celtics, of course, had ended their streak, or at least were one of the two teams that beat them in the week where they lost that big winning streak. But still, Pistons going on the road, getting business done and beating Boston. Then you have the Knicks, who, of course, are currently on a big surge. They're in the NBA Cup Finals, and that's because they've won five in a row and nine of their last 10. They're 18-7 on the season, just 2.5 back of the Pistons, and three games ahead of the next bunch of teams, which starts with the Toronto Raptors, who are 16-11, still hanging on to that third seed despite, frankly, not playing so well recently. They're 4-6 in their last 10. But the Celtics and the Magic, 15-11. For both of them, they're not too far behind those Raptors. And of course, those two teams, a little bit more serious contenders, frankly, to not to be rude to the Raptors, but it's true. Definitely more competitive rosters, in theory, on paper, than the Celtics and the Magic. But of course, the game is played on hardwood, not on paper. The Philadelphia 76ers are also in this race, just a half game back of the Magic and the Celtics at 14-11. Which also means they're tied with the Cavs and the Hawks, who are 15-12 in the 7-8 spots. Of course, the Sixers getting finally a signature Joel Embiid performance recently. I think he had 39 points a few nights ago. They're still obviously going to be an injury-prone all year long, because they injury-prone team all year long, I should say, because they have Joel Embiid and Paul George. So kind of by nature, that's what's going to happen with that team. But look, they've stayed afloat without both of the guys healthy. They've stayed afloat with one of them playing, with neither of them playing. I think that goes to their advantage, because I think all Philly's going to ask for is just to get into the playoffs and just have both of those guys healthy by the time they're in it. And if they can have both of them healthy when they're in the playoffs, who cares who they're playing? Who cares what seed they're at? they are going to be a tough team to beat. So I think that's the Sixers' plan, and I think that's a good plan. I think, frankly, even if it's the 8 seed, even if you're in the play-in games, instead of being in the 4 or the 5 or the 6, you can still win a playoff series. We've seen it happen before. So I think the Philly's got a good chance to just keep staying afloat, just kind of chipping away at this all season long, make the play-in and just see what happens. I think that should be their plan, and that is what's happening currently. Then you have a team who's really the definition of make the play-in and see what happens. That's the Miami Heat. They do this every single season. They are the play-in warriors, but they are 14-12 this season. They've lost 5 in a row now to fall to 9th place, their perfect resting spot in the East. Then you have the Bucks at 11-16. Amid many, 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 many Giannis trade rumors, they are 3.5 games back of the Heat for that 9 spot and tied with the Bulls for the final play-in spot, who are 10-15. You have the Hornets at 8-18. They're 4-6 in their last 10, so that's technically improvement. The Nets, who are 7-18, they're 4-6 in their last 10. Again, technically improvement. And the Pacers, who are 6-20, so 4-6 in their last 10 is also improvement. And finally, at the bottom of this terrible, terrible bottom of a conference, you have the Wizards, who were 3-7 in their last 10, 4-20 overall. Terrible record, but again, technically 3-7 is better than the 1-16 start. So not too bad for the Wizards recently, although obviously a really, really bad season heading towards another lottery pick. But then in the West, you guessed it, it's the Thunder on top. They're 24-2, although now all the wins record conversations have, I wouldn't say died down, but, you know, taken a backseat to the fact that they lost to the Spurs in an important game. Of course, still their 923 winning percentage, even right after a loss, is still on pace for 75.7 wins. So, yeah, they should still be on pace to break this record if they keep going 12-1, 12-1, 12-1, as I noted many, many weeks ago. But right behind them, you have the red-hot Denver Nuggets. They've won 5 in a row. They are 19-6 on the season. Jamal Murray trending towards his first All-Star appearance ever, which a lot of people say it's surprising, but the guy has just not been healthy, and he's been a playoff riser more than anything else. Really hasn't put up All-Star numbers in the regular season, especially with health issues. But this season, he is putting up his postseason numbers in the regular season, and he's staying healthy, which means that he definitely should be an All-Star this year as long as he stays healthy. Speaking of All-Stars, the Lakers have a ton of them. They are 18-7 on the season, 7-3 in their last 10. They're third. But of course, they lost to the San Antonio Spurs, who are also 18-7. That was in the Cup quarterfinals, where the Spurs have now won 3 in a row to get to the finals. Right behind those two, you have the Rockets, who are 16-7, 2 games behind. They're 6-4 in their last 10, just doing Rockets things. Then you have the Timberwolves, who are 17-9. They're a half game behind the Rockets, 1.5 behind the Spurs. With that record, 7-3 in their last 10 at the 6th seed. The Suns are 14-12, not playing terrible basketball, playing okay. They're definitely playing annoying basketball, especially if you ask LeBron James, who is more than fed up with Dylan Brooks. But the Suns are in the 7th seed currently, 3 games behind the Timberwolves and 1.5 games ahead of the Warriors, who are 13-14, despite Steph Curry coming back from injury. Really, it's been Steph Curry, a few good games from Pat Spencer kind of out of nowhere, and then everybody else has just been kind of a struggle, frankly, all season long. So the Warriors under 500, but still in the playoff picture, because the Grizzlies are the next best team at 11-14. They're 7-3 in their last 10, but not necessarily trending towards 500 anyway. The Jazz have now broken into the play-in bracket at 10-15. They're 5-5 in their last 10. And then at the very bottom of the West, you have the Blazers and the Mavericks, who are only both a half a game and a game, respectively, out of the playoff spot at 10-16 and 10-17. And then the really, really bad teams in the West, the Clippers at 6-19, the Kings at 6-20, and finally, at the very, very bottom, the New Orleans Pelicans at 5-22.
And to cap off this week's podcast, let's talk about the most significant games in the last week of college basketball action.
Starting with number 2 Michigan, who destroyed Villanova, as they have kind of done all season. They've kind of been a wrecking crew. They also beat Maryland later, but we don't even need to talk about that game. Michigan won that game by 28. They, again, just keep dominating. That was their 6th straight win by 25 points, although kind of a bad omen, because I think the last two teams to do that actually lost their next game immediately. So pretty interesting thing there, but Michigan did not do that. Then you have number 5 UConn, who beat number 18 Florida 77-73. Again, Florida keeps getting closer and closer and closer to winning one of these games. They just still can't do it. And I think that that's the big difference between this team last year and this team this year. They're frankly not a similar level. They're definitely a step down, a tier down from last year, but they also just can't win the close games, which I think last year they had Walter Clayton to make the clutch shot for them. You know, they had a guy, they had a go-to guy to give the ball to and let him work in the clutch time. And that's kind of been, you know, it's what wins in March. Guards win in March. And also just even if you're looking at the NBA, you're not giving the ball at the end of the game to your center, no matter who he is, unless, you know, we're talking about an all-time guy. We're talking about Tim Duncan. We're talking about Shaq. You don't want the ball in their hands if it's anybody else that's not them, right? I mean, even LeBron, you know, like that's probably the biggest guy, LeBron or KD. Those are the biggest guys you're going to just give the ball to handle it at the end of the game. And unfortunately, Florida's guards just aren't the quality that they had last year, not even close to it. So they can't really put the ball in anybody's hands at the end of the game. And it's been a struggle because they've lost, I mean, four or five games by really, really close margins this season. All of their losses have been close. They've hung in there with every team they've played. They just can't get it done in the clutch, which is the opposite of last year. But speaking of getting it done in the clutch, the opposite of the Florida team, number 10 BYU overcame a massive deficit to beat Clemson 67-64. I will say, though, PSA to BYU, you should start playing basketball in the first half because Clemson's not good enough to really, really just put you away after that. But the way that BYU has played all season long, they have been a second half team, but by too much of a margin. We're not talking about, you know, they're leading by 7 or 8 points heading into the half, and then they, you know, explode, get a 20-point, outscore their opponents by 20 points in the second half. It's like they're losing going into halftime, and then they outscore every team by 10 to 15. That's a little too close. This game shouldn't be at a buzzer beater. If they played how they played in the second half, in the first half, they would have blown Clemson out. So they have to, at some point, start playing better games earlier on in the game, because that's going to come back to bite them when they play a team like Houston, when they play even like a TCU, who's been a tough out this year against some of the better teams in the country. Obviously, against teams like Arizona, Texas Tech, Kansas, who are at the top of that conference with them, they can't afford to just start out the games, you know, especially on the road where things start to snowball a little bit more. They just can't afford to start out games in big holes. They're not going to climb their way out of it all year long, especially against better competition. So they need to figure out that problem sooner rather than later. But moving to Big Ten action for a second, number 13, Illinois beat Ohio State 88-80. That's a road win for Illinois, a quad one win. It'll probably stay there all year long. Don't think Ohio State's falling out of the top 75, even if they don't make the tournament. Then you have number 23, Nebraska, who beat Wisconsin 90-60. So just a beatdown for Nebraska ball. We talked about what they did later in the week earlier already. So a big win to start out the week for them, though, as well, proving that they're real in conference, playing one of the middle-of-the-pack teams and just running them out of the gym. Then you have number 4, Iowa State, who beat Iowa by 4, 66-62. Based on how Iowa State played against Purdue, you wouldn't have expected this game to be very close. But Iowa, they did a good job. They kept it close. They had a shot to win this game at the end. They couldn't. But look, it's a positive sign for the Hawkeyes, who are obviously in their first year under Ben McCollum. At some point, though, I think Bennett Sturts does need to take more minutes on the bench. Maybe not in these big games, but in these smaller games. Like, look, he's just getting worn down. And when you see it against Michigan State, you see it against Iowa State. He's just not the same player in those big games because he just runs around all game. He has one of the highest usage rates we've ever seen, and he just can't sustain it against better defenses who have the talent to focus in only on him and then also still have good enough rotation and schemes behind that to be able to block out other shooters. So Iowa's going to have to figure out something with those minutes. I think they do need to change something. They haven't done it yet, but we'll see if they do it later. Then you have number 5, UConn, who beat Texas 71-63. Again, UConn getting another quality win on the board. They've had a pretty tough schedule, pretty underrated tough schedule. They've kind of skewed that by playing sub-300 teams a lot. But every other game that they haven't played against one of the worst teams in the country, they've played against one of the top 40 or 50 teams in the country. So it's worth noting that that schedule a lot harder than people made it out to be. If you want to talk about a really hard schedule, though, number 1 Arizona beat number 12 Alabama 96-75. That's their 5th win over a ranked team this season. Of course, UCLA not going to be ranked anymore, but still ranked at the time that they played each other. I said earlier Michigan beat Maryland. That was a 101-83 game. This was the Axel Lindenborg's breakout game. He had 29-9-8 and 3 blocks. Very, very good game for him. You have Purdue, who beat Marquette 79-59. Marquette continues to look uncompetitive as the season rolls on, bringing down the Big East for sure. I mean, they might be the worst team in the Big East, frankly. You know, they're probably not going to end the year that way, but for now, looking at the record, they're under 500. They have just been struggling all year long. Then you have number 8, Gonzaga, who beat number 25, UCLA, 82-72. Good win for Gonzaga in Seattle, but, you know, it'll be a low quad one win for most of the year. I don't think UCLA is going to live up to the expectations from the preseason, but they'll still probably float around a 5 or 6, maybe a 7 seed. Then you have number 9, Michigan State, who struggled a little bit, but still won their first game in conference play 76-72 against Penn State. Louisville beat Memphis 99-73, a statement win for the Cardinals, backing up their wins that they had gotten last week. They're really starting to round into form. Nebraska beat Illinois, as we already talked about. Arkansas beat Texas Tech, as we already talked about. Florida finally got a win, a decent win. They beat George Washington 80-70. Again, not a marquee win, but still George Washington had been pretty good on the season. So a good win that, you know, casual fans won't really care. The tournament committee will a little bit. It's proving that, you know, this is still a team that can go out and beat tournament quality teams, even if they haven't shown it when they've played, you know, a bunch of one seed contenders all year long so far. Then you have number 19, Kansas, who beat NC State in overtime, as we talked about earlier. The basketball edition of Bedlam, Oklahoma, beat Oklahoma State 85-76, important because Oklahoma State had previously been undefeated this season, albeit against kind of a weak schedule, but they'd still taken care of business. And then LSU beat SMU 89-77. SMU also was undefeated. SMU had lost to Vanderbilt, but outside of that game, was undefeated. And that's important because Vanderbilt has been running through everybody. So, for another team to be able to beat SMU shows that, you know, we need to figure out what this team's level is. I think they're probably another, a bubble team again this year, like they were last year, but maybe without as much of a fall off at the end of the season as they had. I think they are a little bit better. I think they're going to be on the right side of the bubble this year, but they are definitely a bubble team in a much improved ACC. Meanwhile, LSU making the bottom of the SEC a little bit better than it maybe was last season, even though the middle has kind of fallen out of that conference to a pretty heavy extent, honestly. But LSU getting that big win, a team that the net really likes, not a lot of people paying attention to them so far, though. But maybe we'll see what they can do in conference play once they really step up the level of competition. And then finally, Boise State beat St. Mary's 68-67. St. Mary's had a great season leading into this, just like SMU. Their only loss was to Vanderbilt. But other than that, they had been kind of just a wrecking crew. And Boise State obviously started the season with the loss to D2 Hawaii Pacific that really kind of derailed things, according to fans. But they've bounced back, and they have played a lot better in the last few parts of the year, and now getting this win. Very, very important heading into kind of a weaker Mountain West conference. Not necessarily expecting multiple teams even in the tournament from that conference, despite, you know, this conference being a 5 or 6 team league as of a few years ago. So interestingly enough, they've kind of faltered in the non-con play, but wins like this are the reason why the Mountain West typically does end up getting multiple bids. If there are going to be multiple, it's going to be Boise State and Utah State, maybe San Diego State. In Utah State right now, Utah State is kind of the big fish in the conference, and then there are 3 or 4 bubble teams between Boise State, Colorado State, San Diego State that all have a chance, but not major chances like they would in the past.
That wraps this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, December 23rd, where we will once again talk about Patrick's weekend predictions, talk about the college football playoff, and perhaps some significant games from bowl season. We will review Week 16 in the NFL and have our weekly review of basketball action with a look back at the NBA and college basketball's most significant games and the NBA standings. In the meantime, please be sure to check out Patrick's picks for next weekend's games, which will be posted as always on Thursday, and his College Hoops Bracketology, which comes out every Monday. All of that content is on our social media handles at 4th and 24. That's the number 4, THAND, plus the number 24. Thank you for listening.